The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. On a day that Manchester City went one step closer to retaining the title, that's after a 5-1 victory away against Wolves at Molineux. It was the Kevin De Bruyne show. Four goals for the Belgian international. Sterling getting a late one as well, which means City now are 20-1 on to win the title. They are 3 points clear with two matches remaining. They've got superior goal difference to Liverpool. So in theory, really, they just need to pick up one more win and that should do the job for Pep Guardiola's side. As promised, Mario is with us, as is Gab Marcotti. Let's start with Kevin De Bruyne, Mario. How good was he today?
Oh my God! Just just watching a player, when you see him that comfortable, it's almost scary to watch. Like, I mean, we all, you know, been involved in this game, but just how comfortable he looks. Like, even when there was a moment when the Wolves came back into the game, then you just see him finishing and carry on. It almost becomes a normality for him because the way the expression on his face, it says a lot. So that's why I really enjoy watching him.
Yeah, of course.
I think the impressive thing for me for City is, look, we all know they're a terrific, talented, enjoyable team to watch. Arguably, and we were talking about it before, clearly they're not going to win the Champions League this year, they're out. But I still think they are the best team in Europe at the moment. But to come back from such a disappointment in the Bernabeu and the manner in which it happened and the manner in which they controlled both games to go out, but to come back-to-back games and perform the way they have,
yeah,
I think it's quite impressive. I think it tells you a lot about the mentality of not only the manager, but what he's put into his players, the mindset that they have, the professionalism that they have, that they can get over such a huge disappointment. And it must have been. We've all, as players, been in dressing rooms where you're just on the floor, your chin's on the floor at the end of a game because you've realised the big chance is gone. And then you have to pick yourself up again 3 days later, whatever it is. That's difficult. No matter how talented you are, and these City players are, that's difficult. And I think that's been more impressive than their actual football, that they've been able to brush that aside and go, huge disappointment, but Liverpool are on our tails. That's been very, very impressive indeed.
Is it over, Mario?
I mean, look, you know what I said about Liverpool regarding the title race. I always said, like, Liverpool got the energy and everything to fight back and go and win it. But what I saw yesterday and what I saw today, I feel like if City let this one go, they will be really, I mean, you know, let's keep it clean, but they will not be smart. Let's say it like that, because this is theirs. There's no doubt about it. They have everything in control. Just what Greg said about, the individuals. They have everything as a team, and then the manager, it comes down to the test, you know, can you bring it over the line? And I think they can.
But West Ham are pushing for that Europa Conference League place, Craig.
I think Jurgen Klopp now, really, obviously FA Cup final on Saturday, Champions League a couple of weeks later, two Saturdays later, I think he starts semi-focusing on that. If he wasn't already.
Yeah.
But I think teams, publicly, I don't think he'll admit it, but City can still lose a game and win the title because of the goal difference.
Yeah.
I think Liverpool are probably inside know that it's very, very, very unlikely.
If you were a player, if you were a Liverpool player today, would you have been watching?
Don't think so. I don't think so. I just have been...
That's interesting.
No. No.
You're right, Mario. I'd be watching Greg. You're right, I'd be watching Greg. Come on.
No, I don't think I'd be watching that. I think I'd just wait and see what the result was at the end. And
right.
I might with these kind of things, if I remember rightly, in our tussle with Rangers, and it was a head-to-head, it went all the way to the last game of the season, I tend to maybe look at half-time, have a sneaky peek.
Yeah.
See if it's going, and if it's going pear-shaped, I'm not looking again. If it's quite close, I might have a sneaky peek around 75 minutes.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if I was a Liverpool. They might have done, I don't know. I personally would not have.
Mario, you would have been watching.
I mean, I totally agree with what Greg said, but when the dunk is scored, I might keep my eye a little bit longer than only a peek.
Yeah. 4 minutes later, then you're like, back down again.
De Bruyne's name would have been popping up in Liverpool tonight quite a lot.
Back on the teletext, wasn't it?
Not some particularly nice words.
Gab, even with your contrarian ways, it's difficult to put an argument up as to why it's not over, isn't it?
The only way I see, and obviously we saw, and I go back to this, remember when I got derided for questioning the fact that, you know, Mendy and Ferran Torres were there at the start of the season, they left and weren't replaced, is maybe the fact that you're in a situation now, Walker, Stones, Ruben Dias are all out for the rest of the season. We saw Fernandinho starting tonight. Then we saw him having to come off, Rodri ending up the game at center half. Could there be a scenario where, you know, somebody gets hurt and maybe somebody gets suspended and then it's Egan Riley and, you know, other kids having to play at the back and then it goes pear shape and they bottle it? It's extremely far-fetched, but I think it would have to take something of that order because, you know, let's face it, much as West Ham are going to be highly motivated in the hunt for the Europa Conference League spot, as you noted, you know, I think these last two games look all downhill for City.
I think it's there's certainly some, as Gab said, some huge defensive problems with the injuries. But looking at the last two games, it's how do you stop them putting 3, 4, and 5 past you? That's the big question. Is that they're free flowing at the moment, and unless De Bruyne, he decides to give De Bruyne a day off. And why would you? They've nothing else to play for. Then it's going to be very, very difficult, even for West Ham, who are a pretty solid side, not to be leaking, you know, at least a couple of goals against this team.
Manchester City, the top goal scorers in Europe, without even having a striker. And, of course, that will change next season as we learn that Erling Haaland will be joining Pep Guardiola's squad for the start of the next campaign. Craig, it's the first time you've been on since it's official.
Yeah, well, I did it on digital this morning with Mark Ogden, and you've clearly not watched that.
No, I'm afraid not.
Well, I think, you know, if you remember back a few months ago, I didn't know he was going to City, but I felt that would be the best place for him to go, primarily because they are, one, the coach, and two, the squad, and the way they play. I don't mean the way they play suits him, I just mean in a general sense, the way that they play football, how they create chances. Now, you know, people say, I've seen one or two saying, well, he's not really a link-up player, and well, he doesn't do this, and I understand that. He does a bit of everything. He runs in behind if teams don't defend deep against him. Clearly, they're going to be able to put balls in the box earlier than they have. They're a team that sometimes overplays. Don't always put early crosses in, because quite often they've got a Bernardo Silva or a Gundogan getting in the box. So that's an option. But if you remember back to Sergio Aguero, and, you know, they had some good success there with Guardiola, he wasn't really he's more a penalty box player. Mm-hmm. He's not really, yes, he could link up, but he's clearly different to Haaland in terms of his physicality, but he wasn't a natural link up player. He would, good movement, good finishing. So I think Haaland gives him a bit of everything. And there's also, if he has some injury problems, which he has had at Dortmund this year, is that's not going to derail City, whereas they're not reliant on bringing a striker in, and if they lose them, they're stuffed, because they've already shown that they can do it another way.
Yeah.
So this is just another option for them, and I'm intrigued to see how it works out.
We've discussed this over the last couple of days. Could it prove to be a problem for the Premier League? This is City now looking like they're going to make it 4 out of 5 wins. The last 5 seasons, you're bringing in one of the most sought-after strikers in the world to make yourself even better.
Well, again, that's a thing we touched on in the video earlier today that you have.
Oh, I should have watched that.
And, you know what I mean, Mario?
Great.
I can spend all day with you. I don't need...
I thought, I'm sorry for you, mate.
thanks, Mario. 12 years we've been like this.
So, as strange as it seems, I don't think this obliterates Liverpool.
Right.
I don't think this means, oh, not even Liverpool are going to catch them now. Unless they don't have a very good summer, unless they lose a Salah or a Mane to, or whoever, they've already shown they don't have the spending power of Man City, but they have a very good recruitment policy and have recruited very well. Mm. That front five, hopefully for them, has not gone away to rotate. So, and Klopp's already signed a new contract recently. So, Liverpool are still going to be there. Clearly, there's going to be a lot of eyes on Chelsea and what the takeover means, what's going to be spent, how late to the party are they going to be in terms of everything happening and the recruitment policy for future players. How far is that down the line because of all the change? That's a difficult one for them. But I honestly don't think that, oh, Erling Haaland has signed, that's it. Not even Liverpool are going to catch him. I'm not in that camp.
Mario, is it a concern as a fan of the Premier League that we could be seeing Manchester City running away with it now, as other clubs have done in other leagues?
No, I don't think so. I feel like, look, we look at last season, we look at this season, look how close those two clubs are. And, okay, Haaland is definitely a great catch because he's, what you already said, one of the highlighted, top strikers. But away from that, you still have enough teams that are, look, Chelsea would love to be part of that journey. Just like Greg said, we don't know what the investment is going to be in that. Then you look at Liverpool, you think Klopp is going to extend this contract and not thinking that he can catch them? Yeah, those two, they're very good buddies, you understand, Guardiola and Klopp. But at the end of the day, we know what we always like. You know, when you got a good mate, you always want to beat him. And that's why I don't see that this battle will be finished. And when you look at all the other teams, like, okay, we cannot maybe call Arsenal yet, but those are teams that all want to push on and get there. So that journey, I feel like all the teams that are not playing the game now would love to be part of that that journey. And I think Chelsea, they tried, okay, they didn't come that close. But I feel like that is one of the most important one. And I don't think anybody should be worried because Haaland is coming. Yeah, it's exciting. I like it. But I don't think you should look at your club and think like you can't catch up with the big boys.
Gab?
If you have the financial aspect, of course. Eh?
No, I agree. It's not open and shut. There's a lot of things that can change and can go wrong. You look at the contracts of some of the players. There's some question marks about who's going to stick around. They're going to change. And the recruitment's been very, very good so far. Obviously, Fernandinho's moving on. Raheem Sterling's contract is winding down. Gabriel Jesus's contract is winding down. Okay, they're going to bring in other players to replace them. But whenever you make a new signing, you know, it can work out or it can go wrong. So, no, I agree with the boys. You're not going to crown Manchester City for the next few years just because Erling Haaland has landed. That said, he's a phenomenal player who makes them a lot better. And I'd like to remind everybody that he's still 21 years old. And so when people say he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, he's still improving. And he has the tools to do all that. It's not like they added the finished article and we don't like what he does. He can still learn, and he's got a very high ceiling.
If we're still sat here and talking about City winning another in 5 years' time, well, that'll be a miracle to start with.
Yep.
You and I are still here.
Well, you'll be saying, did you not watch that YouTube video 5 years ago that I did with Mark?
And 5 years to watch it, otherwise you're in trouble. And it was fascinating stuff, I tell you. That's a problem if,
right,
we're looking at a sort of Bayern Munich scenario. I don't think we are. And I tell you what...
Well, we've seen four out of five. It's
yes,
quite
but,
dominant.
But I tell you what, and you know I've said... my own personal opinion is at the moment is that Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp are, in my opinion, the two best coaches on the planet, mm-hmm. right? Currently.
Gab shouting Carlo Ancelotti.
No, he's obviously done a great job. Those two are the best on the planet. So, we know... I'm not exactly sure about Guardiola's contract in terms of lengthwise, and I think Klopp's now got 4 years left or whatever. But if any of those coaches change their mind or leave early or at that point they leave, things change. It's not just, oh, we've got this amount of money and so we're going to win the league.
Right.
Look at Man United throwing the money about. Look at Everton, who haven't spent in that bracket but have spent a lot of money but have spent it badly and are now fighting relegation. A lot of what these two teams, yes, comes down to recruitment, yes, comes down to finances, but a big lump of it is down to the two men in charge.
Right.
If they were to leave those clubs, those are absolutely monstrous shoes to fill. And you might... We probably won't see Man City, for example, or Liverpool playing in the manner in which they are under different coaches with that success. So things can change, and things can change very quickly. Not in the immediate future, but maybe 3 or 4 years down the line.
Well, as Gab mentioned, in the immediate future, we will see changes to the Manchester City squad. You mentioned Gabriel Jesus. His agent has been talking about potential suitors and where he might go in the summer. There's been links, of course, to Arsenal. We've seen we had talks with Arsenal about Gabriel Jesus. We like the project. It's a possibility we're discussing. There are 6 small clubs interested in Gabriel. Good old agent talk, Gab.
I mean, look, I think... When a guy comes out and talks like this, the writing's on the wall. He has not extended his contract. He may have scored 4 goals a few weeks ago, but I think a lot of people look at him and say, you know, great guy, works really hard, doesn't make the grade at City, and is he a center forward? You know, can I sign him to play center forward, or is Pep right? You know, we've seen Pep use him a lot. Most when he did play him, it was mostly on the wing. And I think that is what leaves clubs a little bit confused about him. Good for him that Arsenal are talking to him. I think Arsenal are casting a wide net for their center forward. He'll find another club, and maybe he'll be given the chance. Maybe in a different system, he can be a prolific central striker, or maybe he'll just go back to being a really, really good winger, just maybe not a Manchester City starting caliber winger.
Pep used him quite a lot, and in some big games as well. Clearly likes him, but as Gav said, he looks like he's on the move.
Well, they've signed that chap from Borussia Dortmund.
Yes, exactly.
That's going to be...
So it's Arsenal...
And they've also signed the lad from South America, whose name escapes me. I think it's Alvarez.
Yep.
The youngster.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there comes a time where, you've done a great job for me, and he has, as Gab said, from a wider position. At times, he's come on, he's scored goals, he's worked hard, he's tracked back with fullbacks. Yeah.
Is Arsenal the right destination, do you think? Does this work for both sides?
I think potentially, because he needs... It gets to a point in your career, if you're spending a lot of time on the bench like he is, that it gets old when a manager says, I'm going to use you now, I'll play you in this game. And it gets a little bit old
right.
for players. Unless your mentality is, I'm happy to take the money and do that. I can sense at this stage of his career... He wants to be the leading striker somewhere. Yeah. And clearly Arsenal are a club who are in the market for that kind of player.
Mario, does it make sense to you?
Yeah, because look, I know that Jesus, I followed him before he actually joined City, you know, as a Brazilian player. And, you know, when you come to City, you are used to playing all the time. He was that kind of player. He plays all the time. Then he comes to City, I think... If you're not a De Bruyne or anybody in that category, you have to have an extremely level of patience because sometimes you're just not going to play. And I think when he goes to Arsenal, the only advantage for him would be is that Arteta is there. Who knows him better? Normally, when you assist of someone, that what Arteta was from Guardiola, he does the training sessions and he spends a lot of time with the players. So individually, he knows him better than anybody else. So if he thinks he fits right in the program what he's looking for, then it's a good move for him to take because you know him, you know his personality, you know what Arteta expects from you, and maybe he wants to be the striker and not play as a winger. So that is the question that Jesus has to answer for himself to see, like, because you don't want to be another, go to another team and do the same journey again while you're already at a top team.
Meanwhile, another action today. We saw Chelsea all but guarantee a place in the Champions League to the detriment of Leeds, who are in big, big trouble. You can see now Chelsea 4 points clear of Arsenal. Let's not forget, tomorrow we'll see Arsenal take on Spurs in a massive North London derby. But let's focus, shall we, as to what happened at Elland Road. Chelsea started off, got that early goal from Mount and didn't really look back, Craig.
No, this is the worst possible start for Jesse Marsh's side. I've got to say, a brilliant goal from Mason Mount, who continues to be somebody who delivers the goods for Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, and then Mario, Chelsea kicked on 2 more goals in the second half. Nice preparation from their point of view regarding the FA Cup final this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, OK, he, you know, Sia came on. He's great to look at. He took his time on this one, though. And look, I actually worried a little bit for him because I was like, did he take too long? But you could see the connection between the two players, that they clearly are very friendly to each other. But just this is a good step for them to move forward because, hey, Liverpool, you know, the Giants is waiting for you, so you got to step up.
Do any of the performances you saw today, Mara, do you think they will change Thomas Tuchel's mind regarding who he'll start in the final? We're looking at Lukaku in that question, really.
Yeah, like, whew, that's a big question. I would pick Lukaku. Why? Because I think scoring a goal, you know how it works on the strikers. The confidence could, you know, help him in this moment that he scored a goal and then coming into the next game. It will always be a derby in his mind, regardless if he plays for Chelsea. Everton will always be on the back of his head and thinking, like, I got to fight this game.
What do you think?
I mean, he run the channels early on quite well, held it up. Did take a long time for that goal, but and scored it, so it doesn't matter. I think Havertz.
Yeah.
I think he'll go back to tried and trusted. He was able to leave some players out today. I had a couple of injuries as well, who are probably going to be back. So I think he'll go back to, yeah, probably a Kai Havertz up front. And this was an opportunity to give Romelu Lukaku a run out against a team who have just been leaking goals for fun. And of course, once they go down to 10 men pretty early in the game again, then it's pretty much all over for them.
Well, let's talk about them going down to 10 men. As you mentioned, obviously Daniel James was sent off. We saw Ayling sent off early in that match against Arsenal as well. What does this tell you about what's going on in the team?
That players are just making poor decisions. I mean, that's a red card all day. It's completely reckless. In fact, the fact that Kovacic hasn't got a broken ankle is a bit of a mystery. You can make aggressive challenges, of course, and that's what a manager wants, but you have to have an element of control. There was no element of control whatsoever in the Ayling challenge at the weekend and the Daniel James. Now, for Jesse Marsh, one, you've now got suspensions. Two, you've gone down to 10 men. Three, you've had Phillips out most of the season. You've had Bamford out most of the season. You've got Dallas out with a broken leg. You've got all these injuries. And you're scrapping and fighting. You need players to make really good decisions in terms of their discipline. He hasn't had that, and that could cost him a place in this league.
Yeah, Mario, you just feel Leeds are in big trouble.
Yeah, you know, like just you, when you see tackles like that, people have to go a little bit deeper in the situation because, look, you saw James doing that. Okay, in the game, you saw Phillips doing also a tackle. I'm not saying like he did the same level as him, but when players are running on that edge, it means that sometimes the situation they're in could be a little bit too much to them. And I think they have to be careful because if not, you're going to lose key players. They already lost so many on injury. But if you keep on losing, who are you going to fight with? Because the pressure is on, eh? That's also a question to your confidence.
Pressure's on Jesse Marsh big time here.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I know this was a very unbalanced squad that didn't spend and Bielsa did it a certain way. And I know he's had players making bad decisions as well, but that's management. Now, the fact is, as difficult a job as this is and has been, when he took over, Leeds were not in the bottom three, right? And now they are. Now, I was saying to you earlier, we were looking at Burnley's run-in, and I was saying to you earlier, there is a goal difference of minus... Burnley have a plus 21 goal difference over Leeds, so they might not need Burnley, this is, to win another match. Technically, they could lose the next three matches, and Leeds... And if Leeds don't win a game, Leeds will go.
Yeah. Brighton and Brentford as well are Leeds' final two opponents.
Brighton had a sticky patch a few weeks ago, but they've picked up again. Obviously, Wallop, Man United, they're a decent side. And Brentford, first season in the Premier League, mid-table. I mean, good, energetic side. And it's injuries. It's desperation for them. And as I say, I could see potentially both these sides, Burnley and Leeds, not picking up another point.
Surprisingly, Everton to get the win against Watford, but I think because of the form of Burnley and Leeds, that's why they're dominating the conversation. Mario, looking at it, who do you think is going down?
I'm worried about Leeds.
Yeah.
I'm definitely worried. You know why I'm worried about you? Okay, when Bielsa had the job, right? They played a style of football that was very open, and it almost comes like you're playing that type of football when you're above number 10. When you're above number 10, you have no worries about you. You can be free, you can be open, you can play the football the way they stretch the pitch open and the way City, almost Manchester City plays, you know, when they have the ball. But then when you lose it, you got to make it really compact. I've been in situations like the way they are in right now. And one of the key things was we had to be fitter than our opponent and we had to make sure that we isolate and shut down every corner. Sometimes I feel like those teams sometimes get carried away. I know you got some talents in the team, but one thing you have to understand is the standard simple things you have to do well. And don't try to pick up and straight away go to the difficulty. And sometimes I see the bottom teams doing that. And that is when you open your team up for no reason.
I tell you, and again, unfortunately, one part of my career, I was down there with Derby in the Premier League for a few years. And the one thing, in my experience, that you have to be able to do when you're fighting down there with two or three or four games to go is somehow be able to keep a clean sheet.
Right? Yes.
And somehow be able to scrap a point out. Mm. And Leeds to me, and I could see Burnley maybe doing that. They're a team that could. I just don't see Leeds as a team that can do that. And those little points here and there are absolutely crucial. But you're down there for a reason. You're unlikely to go and outplay and dominate games, particularly not with the injuries and the suspensions. So you have to be able to do it a different way.
Yeah.
And that's an ugly 90 minutes of digging in for a point that might keep you up. And I just don't think Leeds have that in their repertoire.
They're in trouble,
but Greg, I have one question too. But, you know, Greg, your manager tells you that too. Like, when I was in the dressing room, I had a guy like Steve Bruce. What would you tell me? He said, Mario, I'm so sorry. I know that you maybe come from a Chelsea or whatever, but you are now at Birmingham. It's all about the fight. When I was at Wigan, the same thing. It's not about the beautiful thing that you want to show the fans. No, now it's pure business. Win the game for me. Mm-hmm. That's all we had to do.
And Leeds got the personnel to do that.
To me, no. I just see them getting ripped apart. No matter, he tried to play more defensive today. Obviously, that went out the window with Daniel James going off. He tried to be a bit more defensive today, and he set up early on, and he got picked apart with that Mason Mount goal. So I just don't think. I think it's too big a transition from them from the cup from the however many years Bielsa has been there to just revert to doing it the other way.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Gab, you're looking a bit perplexed.
No, I agree what you're saying, but the reason they went with Marsh is because in many ways he's Bielsa-esque, at least as much as you can be, like Bielsa. His background, where he comes from with the high press, with the attacking football that he had at Salzburg and tried to play at Leipzig as well. I take your point about the fight and being defensive. But, you know, the crazy thing about football is you win a game, you get three whole points. You draw a game, you only get one. They've got two games left. I think he's going to try to win them. And even if he just wins one of them, that might be enough to stay up. Let's not forget, much as we're killing them for the last two games, these are also two games where they had a player sent off early, which is something slightly beyond Jesse Marsh's control. So I'm nowhere near as negative about Leeds' chances of going down than Mario and Craig.
Who have you got then, Gab? Burnley?
I think so. Ultimately, it comes down to the schedule. I think, look, playing Brentford and Brighton, those are wild card teams. You can get the Brentford side that we saw, was it at Old Trafford, where they were distinctly on the beach with their beach balls, or you can go and you get a Brentford side that plays with energy and can go and put you to the sword. Same thing with Brighton. At this stage of the season, those on the beach teams are completely unpredictable in terms of what you're going to get. So, put a gun to my head, I'm going to suggest Burnley out of those three.
Meanwhile, at the other end of the table, very good news for Arsenal fans looking ahead to the big match tomorrow. Of course, it's got a long way to decide who will win for the Champions League because everyone thinks Spurs is going to win. Craig 2-1, Mario 2-1, Gab going for a 1-0 win as well. Antonio Conte's side. And of course, we'll be... What's wrong? What are you making that noise for? No. Craig, you're going to be here tomorrow. Looking back at that...
You're not going to let me give you the start on Arsenal's last five games at Tottenham.
Well, do it quickly then.
No wins.
Oh, OK. What a stat that is. Thanks.
Four wins for Tottenham.
Right.
And a draw in the last five.
That's what I assumed if they haven't won them five.
Let's get back on air. I want to do that to
Craig, back tomorrow.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Inter Milan are the winners of the Coppa Italia after a dramatic final that went into extra time. In the end, it finishes Inter 4, Juventus 2. Gab, where do we start with this?
What a game this was. I mean, this was epic. There were mistakes in it, because there's always mistakes in games like these. But Inter coming out very quickly out of the gate, looked like it was all one way. Juve retreating. Then early in the second half, Juve scoring twice in the period of 3 minutes. And we've seen Inter get nervy. We've seen Inter collapse in those situations. They get a penalty. Çalhanoğlu making it 2-2. Matthijs de Ligt. Not his finest work, I think, giving away that penalty there, then giving away another penalty in extra time, and then to make it 3-2 to Inter, and then Inter putting it away 4-2. I thought this was, dare I say, a mature performance from Inter. They simply have more top-to-bottom quality in terms of the 11s that we saw out there. Juventus, they brought in Locatelli, but he's not fit. You know, you start Zaccaria and Rabiot in midfield. Not the game for that. I thought Allegri made mistakes again with some of his substitutions, which I didn't fully understand. And, Bono, like taking off Dybala when you're 3-2 down. I may be tired, but come on, Mal. Get back into it. Win the game. So a deserved win for Inter. It would have been, I think, real heartbreak for Simone Inzaghi after what I think has been a tremendous season for them, were they to lose out on Serie A. And they haven't lost out on Serie A less. Mm. We still have a proper title race there, and also the Coppa Italia final.
You happy with the penalties, Gab?
I mean, look, there's always so much tension, so much pressure. I know De Ligt's not going to be happy with them, perhaps, but, you know, and also it's worse with De Ligt, because when you're a man that size and you give away a penalty, especially like the second one he gave away, you're going to look clumsy. It's easier for smaller, more compact guys sometimes to get away with it. But, you know, he's a big boy. And I think you should have known better.
You mentioned Dybala, of course, being subbed off when they were 3-2 down. We know he's going to be leaving Juventus. Where's he going?
It's a good question. I mean, obviously, I think by now everybody knows the story. He thought he had an agreement in principle for a contract that would have paid him 8 million euros net plus 2 million euros net in easy-to-attain bonuses. Converted into pounds per week, we're talking 300 grand a week. We're talking, you know, Lukaku-type money, marginally less than De Bruyne-type money. In other words, far more than he's worth at his age. And frankly, I don't think anybody's going to give him that. At this stage, his agent supposedly touting him around Europe and talking United, talking Spurs, I don't believe any of that. There was a suggestion, there's been a strong suggestion of Inter. Inter would love to take the player from him. Obviously, they're going to have Edin Dzeko's salary slot freeing up soon. But equally, Inter before the game saying, well, we really like the players we have. And frankly, now that Juve have closed the door on him, Inter would have all the leverage over Dybala. So if he does sign, it's going to be for a lot less than what he thought he was going to get at Juve.
Another man looking like he's out the door in the summer is Chiellini. Interesting enough, Gav, he's been linked to a move to MLS.
Yeah, he said, like, he's been, according to Italian media, I think, he said offers from two clubs, one of them LAFC, supposedly. At the same time, Juve coming out and saying, well, the minute Chiellini wants to come here and get a front office position at the club, he's welcome to it. Obviously, Chiellini is an educated man. He's a footballer with a degree. He's a good talker, very charismatic. So I could see why Juve would want to have a pathway for him in-house should he decide to hang up his boots. But equally, maybe the idea of MLS for a year or two might be appealing. That said, I also kind of figure, dude, you're Chiellini. You're, 39 years old? Mm. Do you really want to go to MLS, run after all these guys who are younger and quicker than you, play in the middle of a summer in Houston or Dallas when it's 110 degrees in the shade? You sure you want to do that? I don't know.
Thank you very much, Gab. Just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast will drop tomorrow. A lot more reaction as to what happened in the Coppa Italia final. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So there's confirmation then. Atleti with a 2-0 victory. Let's just take a look at the league table. Real Betis now can't catch them. Real Betis now, you take a look at it, 6 points adrift of Atleti. And Atletico Madrid are in the Champions League once again next season. Let's welcome in Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab, obviously an important economical milestone for Atleti today.
Yeah, certainly from a financial standpoint, the Champions League revenue, very important to Atletico Madrid, because let's not forget, they have spent a fair amount of cash. They're on the hook for a number of players. They have a big squad, they just in terms of numbers. And, the way the football is today, you build a Champions League squad, you miss out, then it gets really, really painful. And it can have a knock-on effect as well.
It's been a poor defence of their title. I suppose this is the one silver lining that at least they're in the Champions League.
Well, just off the back of what Gab was saying, that's one of the things that's slightly annoying, is that you have built an expensive squad, a Champions League squad, and you kind of play the way you do consistently. Now, I know this has been an anomaly of a season for them in terms of performances and results, but the performances, and again today in this match, they've won the match, but it's, possession is not everything, but they can't even control the possession stats against an Elche. So yeah, Sid Lowe was saying the other day how important it wasn't how the players were reminded of this. I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago when they looked as if they were in dire straits about their futures, almost threatening the players, not quite, but in a different and a roundabout way. So yeah, they should be in the Champions League with the money they've spent, with the money that Diego Simeone has paid. With that squad, but he's had a wretched season in terms of team selection. We've talked about it almost on a weekly basis when we're watching Atleti, and hopefully from their point of view, he can look at his squad in the summer, he can find a little bit more balance about it, and next year they can go. He can go in with a clearer picture of what is going to be his best 11. That's been his biggest problem this year.
Do you think that picture will include Antoine Griezmann, Gab?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot of people in Barcelona who are hoping that it does, because obviously they don't want him to be sent back there. I think it's been very stop-start, obviously, for Griezmann this year. And I just, when you look at the other bodies, the other players who are there, obviously they've spent money on Cunha. Correa is still there. You have João Felix. Luis Suarez, is he going to continue or not? And you wonder how many forwards you need on a team that, you know, generally likes to be more conservative. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, anything can happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if Atleti either figure out or try to figure out a way to send him back, or say, okay, we'll keep him and his wages, but you got to give us some sort of mega discount, you know, in lieu of simply extending the loan.
Barca just won't answer the door, will they? They try and give him back, return Griezmann.
Keep ringing the phone, but nobody's picking up. Look, there could be a... Look, there's two sides to it. You know, with Xavi going back in there now, it's a different style of football again. It's back to more the tiki-taka, passing, good movement. Maybe that would fit into Griezmann's style of play a little bit better. But I don't think Barcelona want to take the risk.
Yeah.
And in some sense, there's also a risk for Atleti. But there's certainly a risk for Atleti at full price. But as Gab said, I think the desperation for Barca to make sure he doesn't come back is probably going to mean that Atleti are going to get potentially a deal that they want and is suitable to them. But he's got to stay clear of the injuries.
Yeah.
And he's got to produce the form that he did when he was there the first time round. Otherwise, it's going to be a gigantic waste of time.
Well, La Liga action continues tomorrow with the champions playing. They take on Levante at the Santiago Bernabeu. Preceding that, it's Rayo against Villarreal and Real Sociedad against Cadiz. Kick things off on ESPN+. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. We thank Gab.
Thank me.
We don't want your camera at all. That's it. Go away. Go and get my extra time questions.
Bye.
Craig will be back, as will Gab and Mario, to answer your tweets on Extra Time, which is coming up next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Craig Burley with me here in the studio. We also welcome Mario's here, as is Gab Marcotti as well. Look at the view outside your window today, Mario. Beautiful.
Living the life, my friend. I'm just trying to look at you guys.
Oh, nice. Not quite the same view here, is it?
What's that? Well, my view is not very good.
Well, yes, I think the feeling's mutual there. Will Jesse Marsh be sacked if Leeds go down, Gab?
I don't think so. Every indication coming from the club is that, not that they were budgeting for to go down, but they like Marsh. They understand that they've had injuries, that there's a particular situation, and I think the goal is to try to come back up with Jesse Marsh at the helm. That said, it's football. Anything can happen. Don't blame me if he's gone in July.
Well, that's sitting very much on the fence. Thanks, Gab, for that. What are you doing?
Don't know.
What do you mean, don't know? For Craig, how do you rate Tuchel's performance as the Chelsea manager this season? They won the Club World Cup. And the FA Cup, well, they're in the FA Cup final.
Jesus. Well, obviously Saturday's a huge game. They were a little unlucky in the Carabao Cup final because they actually played very well. Obviously they lost in penalties. But if you think back, I think Pulisic and certainly Mason Mount missed a couple of really pretty simple chances. So that could have been a different story, but it's not. We'll see what happens Saturday. I just think, there's an ownership change, but being sort of 19, 20 points off the top is not something that's going to be sustainable long term.
Right.
So, yeah, I would just say okay.
How would you sum it up, Mario? Okay?
No, I think, okay, in the situation they're in, you know, we should not question that situation. They've been tested really hard this season. I think they came through it. I think that was also one of the things that Tuchel didn't always come out with, but I know there was a lot of pressure on the inside. He's in the final. Like Greg said, the other final he lost. He's in this final. I think next season will be the season where we will see, can he close the gap with the top two? Because if you have another gap like this, then you can have a question. And also regarding what the recruitment will be, what are they going to bring in to advance the team?
Mario, Tuchel comes to you and asks you, what is Chelsea's strongest front three? Who do you go with?
I said Lukaku like a minute ago that I would play him. But Kai Havertz, yeah, definitely because of the situation he's been in. You understand the way the team plays, they need a thinker man, and I think that's why I would play him maybe up front. I would pick Mount would definitely be one of my picks. And then the next question comes. I mean, Pulisic scored today. I like him when he scores. When the team is tight, when it's very difficult sometimes to open up the game and need a dribbler, that will be a question for me. So, that I leave one side open. Greg, throw one in.
I think recent
form for me, and I would this would have changed 3-4 months ago. Recent form would be Havertz, Mount, Werner.
Right, those three
recently.
Yeah. Do you agree with that, Mario?
I wouldn't mind it because I asked him for it, so then I have to shut up and just take the man that he put on. So, yes, yeah. I'll take it.
Why do you hate Christian Pulisic? Why don't you have him, Mario?
No, I didn't hate him. No, come on. After seeing him today, school, how can I hate him? Why would I hate him? No. The only thing I said, like, when the game sometimes is very tight and very difficult to open up, sometimes I would like to see him more taking people on. And sometimes I feel like he's very good in finding the solutions where he needs to find the gaps when he needs to score. So in that case, I would never hate him because he makes you win. Come on, why would you hate a player that helps you to win the games?
Why do you think he hides in some of those matches then?
I love you, Dan, but no. Oh, you want me to say something bad? No.
Can you imagine Mario picking a team for the weekend in a game?
There right, 18 got, players.
I got eight. I'm not sure about the final three. Oh, somebody just picked them.
Right, we do it together, man. I got you, so then I don't need to worry about the other picks. I got you.
For Gab, is the current Juventus squad good enough to challenge for Serie A next season, or do they need a few more signings? If so, which areas do they need to strengthen in?
Wow. Short answer, I think no, because obviously they're going to lose Dybala. They have a big decision to make on Morata. I like what they did with Vlahovic. I do think they can come back quickly. I think they're going to need some help at the back. With Chiellini moving on, most likely Bonucci is going to be, 35 next year. I would like to see a decent central defender alongside De Ligt and start rebuilding that way. So I'd say center back. They definitely need a midfielder. This kid Miretti looks really, really good, and it's exciting because he's in house. But this is Italy. This isn't Holland. We don't play 18 or 19 year olds. So I think they'll need some help in the middle of the park, and I think they're definitely going to need another sort of forward, goal scoring wide player. Obviously, Chiesa's coming back on the other flank.
Oh, a lot of players,
but somebody like that who can balance it out. With Vlahovic through the middle.
Mario, which centre-back pairing should Liverpool play in the Champions League final? Van Dijk and Matip or Van Dijk and Konate?
Oh, I go Van Dijk and Matip.
Look at that.
I thought he was going to say Van Dijk and then ask me to pick
one. Yeah, it's great to pick the rest. That's it. I love Van Dijk.
It's weird because he's played Konate in the Champions League games.
Yeah.
But yet, his preferred partnership for the bulk of the season has been Matip.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan, don't you guys wonder what what Konate ever did to Mario, that he was so decisive in picking Matip.
I know. He hates Konate.
Oh, you guys love... Hey, listen. Hey, when I'm done with the show, I will be under the bus. Not yet. So let's go. Don't worry about it.
Of all the players you've played with, who is the one guy you did not want to see take a penalty kick under any circumstances?
Wow.
Was there a penalty shootout, Mario? Were you that person, Mario?
I mean, you definitely don't want me to see kick. You know, like, I had a really terrible time one time with the national team. We were planning to the Euro, and the whole team had to take some, and I took some penalty. I was so terrible. And, oh, my God, Van der Sar kept on saving my penalties, and I was like, you know what, I stop. I'm not going to take it in the game anyway. And fortunately, I never had to take it in the game because I was not good at it.
Why, Mario? What was the problem with your penalties?
I think at the penalty, you don't want a goalkeeper to read you. That's the right. One tip I give you. You know, the moment you kick it and the goalkeeper knows, oh, this guy's going left. I was that guy. I was too honest. You could see my body opening. You could say, oh, he's going left. Oh, he's going right. And Edwin just kept on saving him, and they all looked at me. And Edwin looked at me and goes, why are you even taking them? And I was like, I don't know. I was bad.
Mario, we got to play poker sometime.
Oh, no. I know what you
want. What about you? Is there anyone that you thought, uh-oh, definitely, what? I don't want this person anywhere near a penalty.
What, that was actually taken one?
Yeah.
No.
If there was. When Gary Mack was taking that penalty...
At Wembley?
Yeah, Wembley. Were you confident in him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really unlucky. David Seaman saved it with his leg.
Yes.
But I tell you what, Gary took that so hard. I mean,
yeah, that's got to be tough.
Emotional wreck that night back up in Stratford-upon-Avon, where we were staying at the hotel. He was an emotional wreck still, because he felt the weight of the whole country, because it was the European Championship, because it was at Wembley, because it was Scotland, England. And I know how much it affected him. But I tell you what, we were playing in, I think it was World Cup qualifiers a year or so later in Belarus, in Minsk. A horrible, horrible pitch. End of season. Just had to get a result, and we got a penalty.
Right.
And without even thinking about it, Gary Mack stood up and smashed it in the back of the net.
Wow.
And that was a lot of pressure, because I know how much it carried over for him. But he was technically such a good player. It was just one of those things. It was just such a big occasion. And obviously...
How as players did you handle that after he missed it? Like, because I imagine, like, part of you just wants to help him go out or do just kind of take his mind off it.
Well, we had a few days before we played Switzerland in the final game at Villa Park. So we had a couple of beers, maybe a few more than a couple, at the hotel that night. And he was there, because we had the hotel to ourselves at that point. And he was there, came for a few beers, and then just became... He turned into just an emotional wreck.
I bet.
And went to his room.
Yeah.
But no, you know, the players don't blame players for stuff like that.
Right.
It's just, there's so much pressure. And as Mario said, you know, Seaman went to his right, Gary tried to go down the middle, high, dragged it a little bit, and that big left leg saved it. It's just one of those things, but it's then how you respond to that. And as I say, to step up in a World Cup qualifier, I mean, he could have missed it again, and Scotland it wasn't the final game, but it was part of a qualification campaign. So to stand up again,
yeah.
And in fact, I'd say it was quite disgraceful, actually. We played another game after that at Celtic Park, because Hampden has been renovated, and he got booed. It was quite a bit later,
yeah.
But Gary got booed, and I thought that was quite disgraceful, because I know how passionate he was playing for Scotland. But that's kind of fine. And it wasn't everybody, but you know, you don't boo somebody for missing a penalty, albeit England or not.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone that has been on. We'll be back tomorrow. Spurs against Arsenal, the big game in the Premier League, of course, which will be going a long way to decide who will finish in that fourth Champions League place.